Chapter 6. I didn't sleep long, but I did it well. When my old Mickey Mouse wind-up alarm clock went off at 7, I had to fight my way up from a deep place on the far side of dreamland. I felt like I could use another 18 or 20 hours. It was another instance of my emotions getting the better of me. Using Soulfire on pure instinctive reflex was a mistake, potentially a fatal one. The extra-mortal well of power that Soulfire offered me was formidable in ways I understood only imperfectly. I don't know if it made my spells any more effective against the Red Court, though I had a hunch that it sure as H.E. double hockey sticks did, but I was dead certain that it had drawn upon my own life energy to do it. If I pulled on it too much, well, no more life energy kinda means no more life. And if that energy was indeed the same force that is commonly known as a soul, it might mean oblivion. Depending on what actually happened when you got to the far side, I guess. I have no idea. And no mortal or immortal creature I had ever met had sounded like he knew for sure either. I did know that powerful emotions were an excellent source of additional energy for working magic, sort of a turbocharger. Throw a destructive spell in the grip of a vast fury, and you'd get a lot more bang for your effort than if you did it while relaxed on a practice field. The danger, of course, was that you could never really be sure how much effect such an emotion would have on a spell, which meant that you ran a much higher risk of losing control of the energy. Guys operating on my level can kill others, or themselves, at the slightest mistake. Maybe the soul fire came from a similar place as the emotions. Maybe you couldn't have one without at least a little bit of the other. Maybe they were all mixed together, like protein powder and skim milk in a health smoothie. Didn't matter, really. Less than 60 seconds of action the night before left me exhausted. If I didn't get a handle on the soul fire, I could literally kill myself with it. "Get it together, Harry," I growled to myself. I shambled out of bed and out into the living room to find that my apprentice, Molly, had come in while I was sleeping and was profaning breakfast in my tiny kitchen. She wore a simple outfit, jeans and a black t-shirt that read, in very small white letters, "If you can read this, you'd better have bought me dinner." Her golden hair was longer, she'd been letting it grow, and hung down to her shoulder blades and back. She'd colored it near the tips with green that darkened to blue as it went down. I'm not sure if Molly was bangin' or slammin' or hot, since the cultural catchphrase cycles every couple of minutes, but if you picked a word meant to be a term of praise and adoration for the beauty of a young woman, it was probably applicable. For me, the effect was somewhat spoiled, because I'd known her since she was a skinny kid, somewhere between the ages of training wheels and training bra. But that didn't mean that I didn't have an academic appreciation for her looks. When she paid any attention, men fell all over her. Mouse sat alertly at her feet. The big dog was very good about not taking food off the table or from the stove or the counter or on top of the refrigerator, but he had drawn a line on the linoleum. If any bits fell to the floor, and he could get to them first, they were his. His brown eyes tracked Molly's hands steadily. From the cheerful wag of his tail, she had probably already dropped things several times. She was a soft touch where the pooch was concerned. "Morning, boss," she chirped. I glowered at her, but shambled out to the kitchen. She dumped freshly scrambled eggs onto a plate next to bacon, toast, and some mixed bits of fruit, and pressed a large glass of OJ into my hand. "Coffee," I said. "You're quitting this week, remember? We had a deal. I make breakfast, and you quit morning coffee." I scowled at her through the coffeeless haze. I dimly remembered some such agreement. Molly had grown up being interested in staying healthy, and had gotten more so of late. She was careful about what she ate, and had decided to pass that joy on to me. "I hate morning people," I said, and grabbed my breakfast. I stalked over to the couch and said, "Don't feed Mouse anything. Not good for him." Mouse didn't twitch an ear. He just sat there watching Molly and grinning. I drank orange juice, which I found a completely inadequate beginning to my day. The bacon turned out to be made of turkey, and the edges were burned. I ate it anyway, along with toast that was not quite done enough. The grasshopper had talents, but cooking was not among them. "Things are up," I said. She stood at the sink, scrubbing a pan, and looked up at me interestedly. "Oh, what?" I grunted and thought about the matter carefully for a moment. Molly was not much for combat. It just wasn't her field. The next few days would certainly be hazardous for me, and I could live with that. But if Molly got involved, they might well be murderous. I'd seen both sides of the ignorance is safety line of thinking in action. I'd seen people die who wouldn't have if they hadn't been told about the supernatural and its hazards. And I'd seen them die because they'd been forewarned, and it just wasn't enough to really impress the scale of the threat upon them. There was just no way to know what would happen. And because I had no way to know what would happen, I'd come to the conclusion that, absent factors that might make me believe to the contrary, I just wasn't wise enough to deny them the choice. Molly was a part of my life. This would affect her strongly in one way or another. The only responsible thing to do was to let her decide for herself how she wanted to live her life. That included endangering it, if that's what she felt was appropriate. So, much as I had for Murphy, I laid it out for the grasshopper. By the time I was finished, Molly was kneeling on the floor next to where I sat at the sofa, her blue eyes wide.
"Wow, Harry."
"Yeah," I said.
"Wow."
"You said that."
"This changes everything."
I nodded.
"How can I help?"
I hoped that she hadn't just chosen to get herself killed.
"You tell me. What's the smart move, Padawan?"
She chewed on her lip for a moment and then peered up at me.
"We need information. And we need backup. Edinburgh?"
I drank the last swallow of my orange juice, resented its healthiness, and said, "Bingo.